Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you for joining us. Our guests are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet, Dacia Eaton of KSKA Radio, where she's a reporter, and Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News. President Obama names 56-year-old REI executive Sally Jewell the Secretary of the Interior, and the Alaska Congressional delegation reacts with a certain amount of hesitation, if not skepticism. Paul, tell us about this, what turns out to be a surprising selection.
It is a surprising selection. Senator Lisa Murkowski, said she thinks it could restore balance in an agency that's been troubled over the past few years by regulatory efforts against the oil and gas versus its charge of developing those things, being responsible for all federal land. She's a longtime advocate of conservation and outdoor recreation. She's the REI chief executive. She had a 19-year career as an investment banker, and she was a former petroleum engineer. So she knows pretty much everything there is to know. Yeah, she's going to catch a lot of heat from Republicans during the confirmation process, who are interested in what her stance will be on oil and gas development on federal lands. And besides, other than that, I mean, her credentials are pretty pretty impressive, but they are withholding any kind of adulation yet.
So. Yeah, Steve, I was thinking about this from Alaska's perspective. The one thing we have to know is she reflects President Obama's values and what he wants out of a Secretary of the Interior, which is not going to be identical to ours.
No, it's not. And I think that he has, though, been fairly aggressive. If you compare him to Bill Clinton's administration, he's been pretty aggressive about opening up federal lands, or federal waters at least, for oil exploration. That's how we've got Shell now up in the Beaufort and the Chukchi Sea. Is she going to continue that policy? Well, it's probably going to be dependent on what the president says. So he's the one who sets the policy. She carries it out. But this is a huge appointment for the state of Alaska. She's essentially Alaska's second governor.
Right.
Federal government owns 60% of the land up here, so she has a big say in what goes on. I think the congressional delegation, I don't think they know a whole lot about her. Lisa Murkowski, I think, was quoted earlier in the week as saying, well, hope she she's pro-drilling. And and Senator Begich said pretty much something along the same line. So
I was interested in the New York Times found somebody in Alaska that knew her and that served on a board with her, several mm-hmm. boards, and knew her very well, and that was Fran Ulmer, very good things to say about her as a leader, as a potential executive, and personal characteristics. Yeah. Dacia, you wanted to enter into this discussion?
Well, my ears had been listening for some comment from the Alaska Native and Native American community on this, and this morning on National Native News, I happened to catch a little tidbit, and it sounded like many Alaska Native and Native American groups were happy with this selection.
Okay, well, that's good
something
to hear.
Something to note.
Let's stick with you, Dacia. The Anchorage School Board passes a preliminary budget after hearing a great deal of public testimony. You were there and heard the testimony and heard what the school board members had to say as they took their preliminary vote. Tell us more.
Right. The Anchorage School District is in the middle of cutting about $25 million from their budget. They're quite unhappy because they feel flat funding from the legislature just isn't going to cut it. And so they're going through with these cuts to let people know what the reality is if they have flat funding. And the place was packed at the Anchorage School District. There was standing room only. People were standing in the back. And there was a lot of really moving testimony, specifically about school counselors. Everybody wanted to save their job or their favorite program or their teacher or assistant teacher's job. But much of the moving testimony came from kids and from counselors themselves. One counselor said there was some suggestion during the school board meetings that, you know, crises could be handled through community resources. And earlier in the day, they had someone from United Way come and talk about how United Way could partner with the district to help out during this time of cuts. And so counselors really bristled at that. And one counselor said, unfortunately, you know, crises can't be scheduled. And this is really unrealistic, especially when you're dealing with things like suicide. And some of the counselors testified that they deal with illness, lost parents, suicide, crime, and that those things really can't be
Was there some indication that the cuts or changes that would be made would fall heavily on the counselors rather than teachers, or has that been clear at this point?
No classroom teachers are set to be cut. How the superintendent, Jim Browder, is managing this, he says, is through attrition. So as people leave the district for various reasons, they're the jobs that get cut first. What he is doing is cutting more than 200 support positions. Things like teacher's aides, counselors are a small portion of that, but obviously a critical portion. And no actually certified teachers, classroom teachers, are going to be cut. Let's make that clear.
Anything to add here?
Well, I guess people should know that the final vote on the budget is February 21st. And,
So they have a little bit less than 2 weeks if they want to participate.
Yeah, okay, they probably should get their comments in and show up if they care.
Thank you very much. Steve McDonald, the U.S. Post Office makes a major announcement. It will end Saturday deliveries come August. What are the implications for Alaska?
I think the same as probably the rest of the country, although it takes a little longer to get things up here, so it's probably going to take a little extra longer, another day or so, I would imagine. The post office says it's going to continue delivering packages. We do a lot of mail order business up here, so that's good news. Packages will come, I think, on time, or at least the time that they come in now. This is something that's been talked about for many, many years. The post office, the postal service, is something that's lost billions of dollars. It's a wash in red ink. And this is talked about for a long time about saving millions, if not billions of dollars as well over time. So polls show that folks in the lower 48, the vast majority of them agree with this, that they think it's a good move. It saves the government money. I think Alaskans probably fall in line with that sentiment as well. So it may take a little longer to get a letter up here, but packages will be coming. So
and
that sweater that you ordered.
Maybe some people who live in very small communities will say, okay, there's no mail delivery on Saturday. Guess what? There's none on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday either.
Yeah,
the only day it comes is when the airplane
shows up. So yeah, you're absolutely right. And for those folks, it's really not going to make that much of a difference, I don't think.
Okay. Let's return to you, Dacia. Sticking with education, the Anchorage School District and the Teachers Union are beginning their negotiations on salary contracts.
Yes, they started negotiating Thursday, and they made the documents public on their website. They're kind of buried in there. You have to search for them, but you can find them. And I did take a look at them. The big difference seems to be salary, and the AEA wants just a little bit more. Anchorage Education Association, the teachers union, wants a little bit more than the school district. The school district, it looks like, wants to keep salaries just the same, just about the same as they've been for the past 3 years. And of course, the AEA wants it to increase a little bit. And just for an example, for a first-year teacher in the district, the school district would like the salary to be $47,000 starting off, and the teachers union would prefer $47,500. So it's a difference of $500, but to a teacher could make a big difference. They're also looking at benefits, planning time. One other big thing with benefits is that the ASD is proposing that teachers use the ASD benefit program rather than the program that they've been using, which is the NEA Alaska Health Trust Plan.
And how much, if any, of these negotiations are going to be in public, or has that been decided yet?
I believe the negotiations are going on in closed doors, behind closed doors, but they're making the documents public. And to be honest, I'm not sure how often they've done that before, but they're being very transparent with the documents on the website.
And does anyone have an idea of how long this could take to reach some kind of agreement? I mean, in theory, that there have been situations where people have worked without agreements at all. But is anybody suggesting how long this might take?
I asked that question when I talked with officials, and they said we can't put a time frame on it. They said that
they don't want to be nailed down.
No, they had meetings scheduled for the rest of the month, a couple more meetings this month. But they said that it could last this month or it could go on longer.
Okay. All right. Paul, the state of Alaska House of Representatives passed a revised cruise ship bill that will change some of our pollution laws here in Alaska. Why did the Parnell administration want these changes, and what did they get?
The Parnell administration has a study, a survey, that shows the cruise vessels in Alaska waters with existing technology can't meet the current standard, which is meeting Alaska's water standard at point of discharge. They've changed that now. They have to comply with the same state and federal regulations everybody else has to comply with. And they also are going to allow mixing zones, which are they just the anti-cruise people do not like that at all. So essentially what they've done is say, okay, we're going to acknowledge reality. We can't meet the existing standards. Let's at least make them meet the same standards everybody else meets. And that's where it stands now.
Paul, one thing I was surprised at looking at some of the debate was it went very quickly. It seemed like the legislature had clearly made up its mind.
Well, I think this has been discussed for a very long time. A cruise ship water discharges have been in the news and in the legislature for forever. And I think we've got a Republican legislature now that understands that if you can't meet the standards, you've got to do something about it. So I think that's what happened. It did move pretty fast.
Steve McDonald, what kind of objections did the Democrats offer? Well, and they were definitely in the minority on this.
They definitely were, and they lost out, lost big. There were several, I think maybe three amendments, and all were shot down. I think maybe one or two Republicans crossed over, I think, and voted against the measure that was being proposed.
But Lindsey Holmes, was she one of them? I'm not sure.
Oh, I don't
think
she was.
That's not to be a smart remark.
Yeah, it's probably not a good...
Okay.
The objections, of course, is just that we're weakening, the state is weakening its water standards, and this is not good for a state that depends on fisheries. Les Guerra argued vehemently that this is not good for king salmon. There are various amounts of copper that are going into the water system, and that's not going to be good for king salmon. It's not going to be good for halibut. We depend heavily on fishing up here, and so why are we discharging this wastewater in our fishing grounds, kind of thing. There was one amendment that was offered that would tell fishermen where this waste was being dumped. That was defeated. Andy Josephson, the representative from the UMed district, offered up an amendment that said, okay, a lot of the Princess cruise ships aren't equipped with this kind of equipment that would recycle water and put out cleaner waste. Let's push back the new restrictions. Let's push it back until they have all of this technology on board. That got shot down as well. And the thing that should be pointed out here is this is a mandate from the people of Alaska. This wasn't legislation that was adopted in
Juneau. Initiative.
This is a voter initiative. This is proposed by Alaskans, put on the ballot, and voted and approved by Alaskans. And this is the legislature undoing the will of the people. And this has got to be very frustrating for
people of Alaska. What I wondered when I read that and heard that was if the people who support that kind of a petition would go back to the streets and try it again.
They very well could. There may be the same kind of results that come out. You've got, a two-year cooling off period once something takes, voter initiative takes, becomes law, and then the legislature can go back and dismantle it again.
And we should note that the legislature does have the right and statute in the Constitution to do this.
It does.
They're not acting outside of their purview.
No, they're not. What they've done here is perfectly legal. They also have a mandate of representing the people of Alaska and listening to the people of Alaska. And if perhaps they had done that in the first place, they could have come up with better legislation. We had said this on this program before. When the voters get involved in a petition drive, it's skewed. It goes much more heavily on the side of regulation and maybe a little bit overboard because emotions maybe take over, so they go for the whole thing. Perhaps if the legislature had listened years ago when people of Alaska were complaining about this, they might have found something more middle ground. This is just in my opinion. Again, it's just my opinion. It just creates a lot of ill will out there. I don't think it's a very good way to make policy or regulations in the state.
Okay, well, that's the story is not over. That's one thing
no,
we can
No, that's
sure
true. So it has to go through the Senate.
Desha, here's a surprising story you've been working on. A group of homeowners in the Rabbit Creek area here in Anchorage are concerned by the possibility that non-residential development could possibly drain their water supply or at least limit it. This is unusual. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's a story that's been told in other news media a few times in the past. This church on the corner of Snowshoe Lane up in Rabbit Creek has tried to expand three times. And this group of neighbors has vehemently opposed this. And one of the reasons they say is because during one of the kind of explorations about whether the church would expand, they did this drawdown water test, and they pumped it for 24 hours at 5 gallons a minute from the church as well. And what happened was about 6 of the homeowners lost their water for a period of time, and one of the homeowners didn't ever get water back in one of their wells. And they were compensated by the church for that. The church has since put all development and expansion plans on hold. They're not saying that they would never try to expand again, but they said they have no plans to at this time. And the new development is that this group of neighbors has banded together and gone before the Title 21 committee in the assembly and asked that there be an amendment to Title 21, which is in the final stages of review. And Title 21 is Anchorage land use law. And they want this amendment to protect residential water rights from non-residential development, like a big church or a school or something like that, group housing.
Did you ever get a sense of how much water this church would actually use or was using or is using?
The church stands by a claim that they would never use as much water as was used during the drawdown water tests. It's hard to say. The neighbors say, you know, if this happened during the tests, who knows what could happen if someone left a hose on or if you had a big gathering or if you decided that you wanted a school or something like that. Mm-hmm. But what I do want people to know is that Title 21 comments and suggested amendments are due on Tuesday, the 12th. That's coming up. And the final vote is planned for February 26th by the Assembly. And that's a big deal. It's been 10 years in the making.
Okay, thank you very much. Paul, the State House starts to move on legislation that would expand the school voucher program and provide aid to parochial schools. And of course, this would mean changing our state constitution. What are the advocates? Let's go back. I'm going to start with you, Steve. What are the advocates of this legislation saying, Steve?
Representative Keller from the Valley, yeah. He's the one who's put this forward. He feels that he wants to just give more kids an opportunity to go to private schools, religious-based schools, and this voucher program would open the door for them and help kids who maybe are considered coming from low-income families. It would just help them, give them more options for an education. So that's his motivation here.
Okay. Paul, what are the prospects for a constitutional amendment?
I'm unsure. At this point, we don't have a voucher program, so we, in effect, are not expanding a voucher program because we don't have one. This question is about the constitutional amendment would change the third sentence in Article 7, or the second sentence in Article 7, which bars direct payments to religious schools or private schools. The Supreme Court of the United States in 2002 said it was okay to do that, as long as those payments were directed to the parents, who then could make individual decisions about where that money goes. So what we have here is, and a lot of states have already taken this route and have already gone there. So what's happening here is a slight change to the Constitution, which then would allow direct payments, if you will, vouchers, if you will, to parents to decide what schools they'll go to. The NEA, of course, is against it. I think that would be a fair statement.
Let me jump in to say that at the school board meeting, there was a lot of testimony around the budget, and people jumped in and said, listen, we don't feel like this is a real coincidence that we're getting continuing flat funding here while this voucher thing is being proposed. And a lot of people spoke out against it.
Well, they would, and I think the NEA is against it. Their claim is that it will take away money from public schools, and where it's been employed, it hasn't done that. In fact, though, the spending has gone up. So I think that this is one of those things that's going to be a PR battle up to the last minute, and at that point, the public will step in. The question will be, gee whiz, do you want to change the Constitution? Well, I think the answer will be no this time.
Let's look at a practical matter here. To get this through the House, they would need, or the House and the Senate,
supermajority.
They would need two-thirds, both the advocates would. I guess I could see that, Paul, coming in the House, but mm-hmm. I have a hard time seeing how you
Senate.
Get 14
right.
votes in the Senate with
right.
seven Democrats.
I think this has been so, this, what this is essentially is what we're saying to the public, as proponents do this, as they say. Why not let the public vote on this? This has been around for years. Why not finally have a vote on a constitutional amendment, settle the question, and be done with it? I think the side that opposes it is probably worried about something like that, but I think the guys who think it'll pass are going to push very hard to get it.
And I suppose the people who are going to say, why not let the public vote on it, are going to say, because I wasn't sent here to let people vote on bad ideas or something like that. What do you think?
Now we're going to listen to the people, are we? Okay. I think. You know, that would be the ultimate test of this. The litmus test is to put it before people and
would,
see what happens.
In your judgment, would a campaign like this have the possibility of generating a lot of media expenditures?
Yes, I do think so. I think you'd have a lot of outside groups who'd come up and get involved in this as well. Yeah, it would be it would be widely debated and well-funded, I'm sure. Yes, it would be a very contentious issue.
We're for it.
We're for the spending, is that what you're going to tell
exactly.
me?
Exactly.
Okay, the ConocoPhillips says the tax changes the Parnell administration is advocating don't go far enough. Steve McDonald, explain.
They of course want to see the ACEs, Alaska's Clear and Equitable Share, the way the oil industry's taxed up here. They want to see it overhauled, and that's pretty much the issue before the legislature this session. At least it should be. And you're getting all kinds of folks who are weighing in, and of course you're hearing from opponents, mainly Democrats, who are saying it goes too far. It's a big giveaway, and of course you've got the oil companies, at least ConocoPhillips in this case, saying it doesn't go far enough. It's not going to allow us the kind of benefit that will make drilling in the Arctic profitable. You're going to have a lot of that, and I don't know if you could put it down as posturing on both sides.
I don't think anybody in the legislature is going to be surprised to know that ConocoPhillips, being an advocate for itself, is going to say, I think you can do more.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's an open question right now, and obviously there's support. As certainly with the disintegration of the bipartisan coalition in the Senate this time around, the door is wide open for this. And I think there's also some folks on the Republican side who aren't quite sure about this just yet. There's been some questions raised by Senator Fairclough out of Eagle River who questions the governor's plan. Now, whether that'll be enough to offer amendments and changes, I don't think we're going to see the governor's plan as it's introduced. I don't think that'll be the final product at the end of the day here. So, yeah, you might as well. If you're ConocoPhillips, if you're BP, if you're Exxon, weigh in and say your piece.
And Paul, is there any sort of sense of how quickly this bill might move? Now, we've had, with other major legislation in the past, we've had special sessions and second special sessions and even worse.
I think we could see that again. I don't sense that the legislature is ready to pull the trigger today or tomorrow or next Tuesday or a month from now. The Parnell's bill is ostensibly aimed at increasing production. There's concern that it won't do that. There's concern that all the incentives we give aren't doing their job. Everybody's got an idea what this thing should look like. I don't think even the Republican. I sense there's squishiness out there among them about where to go with this. So I don't see this as one of those quick and dirty things where it's over and done. All the oil industry is going to step up every day, and I think Parnell put it best when he said they want everything. Mm-hmm. Well, they're not going to get everything. And I think the guys who are going to decide that are all huddled in a room, and they haven't got a clue what they're going to give them. So at this point, we're a long way. There's many a slip between the cup and the lip.
Do you think the legislature even, and I don't mean this in a demeaning way, do you think the majority of legislators understand the issue?
I hope so, because I don't.
Yeah, I don't. I certainly don't. And I don't mean that to be derogatory in any way. It's a complicated issue.
It's a very complicated issue when you start talking about, we have progressivity, but gee, do we really need progressivity? Mm-hmm. Aren't we really just trying to trim it here and trim it? They've got their hands full.
And one of the tough things here, Steve, would be And if Parnell gets the kind of legislation he wants, how do we measure success?
Exactly.
How do we measure whether the governor has been
and the
successful?
Oil, and the oil
I guess
and,
that's
but over
it.
What period of time?
Yeah. Give it 5 years.
And I think as a lawmaker, as a legislator, and again, I'm not trying to be demeaning in any way, you got to wonder, where's the triggering mechanism? At what point, where do we go that's going to be make everybody happy and bring in revenues for the state? And it's got to be frightening when somebody says, you know, eliminating progressivity or whatever, you can cost you a billion bucks.
We got time here for one more question, about 45 seconds for Paul. Senator Lisa Murkowski unveils a sweeping energy bill. What's in it?
Mostly a big push for oil and gas development on federal land, using money from those developments for renewable energy, that sort of thing. She wants to stop coal's decline. She wants to spend less money on sending technology out to the hinterlands and developing new technology, all sorts of things. It's the Washington Post, you know, says, well, she's the head of the Senate Energy Committee.
She's a Republican leader.
And so she basically, when she talked, they ought to listen. And I think in this case, we probably should. There's a lot of good stuff in there.
Speaking of talking and listening, we can do no more of either as we are about out of time. Thank you for joining us on Alaska Edition. We'll see you next week right here.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org. Or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.